Taylor Swift. Is it like Beetlejuice, where if you just say her name enough, like she'll pop out through the door?
Yeah,
Taylor Swift.
Just wait for the PJ to get here.
Yeah. all righty, guys. Welcome back to another episode of A Football Fan's Guide to Taylor Swift. That's what we're calling this now. We're doing it this way.
I like that.
So many women getting into football this year solely for Taylor Swift. We're getting into Taylor Swift solely for football.
Ooh, nice.
Just fucking love it. Travis, man, my guy. If she ever leads him, she better watch out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All righty. So this week we're doing the second album from Taylor Swift, which is Fearless.
Yeah. So right off the bat, I texted you this. This is like my favorite sound, I think, from Taylor, at least compared to the pop stuff I've heard. I like this is more of a country. It's not like strictly country, but it's much more of a country sound than like the pop sound. I like this album a lot. I like this sound a lot.
Yeah, man, this album rocks. This album won Album of the Year in 2009 at the Grammys. And it's an iconic Taylor Swift album. It's one of the first ones she tackled when she started re-releasing her albums on her own. And it's where the last album sounded a bit like she was in character.
Yeah.
To a point. And that's only because we know what she sounds like now. This one feels genuinely Taylor in terms of the vocals. She doesn't twang it up just to get that country sound. The country sound comes from the music, and then the vocals are the vocals. And it sounds fantastic. I mean, she absolutely crushes a few songs on this album, dude. I mean, it's not to say it's 100 out of 100, but it's damn near like 100 out of 100, man. Like, and that's crazy coming from me.
Yeah, like, and me.
What the fuck am I talking about? But I mean, you got just there's a couple iconic tracks on this. Romeo and Juliet, 15,
yeah.
Fearless, a couple others
Love
I'm missing.
Story.
Yeah. Yeah, it rocks, dude.
You belong with me.
And I think we should say at the beginning here, we touched on it last week, generates one of the more iconic stories in music history. And really what I would say is the genesis of kind of how we were talking last week about, like, why is Taylor Swift so uniquely popular? Kind of the genesis of that. It's the Kanye West bit. She goes to the Grammys, or no, sorry, the VMAs in 2009 or 2010, and she gets the VMA for one of the songs. I can't remember. So she's up on stage accepting the award, thanking everybody, da-da-da-da. Kanye West walks up on the stage out of nowhere, right in the middle of it, stops her, hits her with, hey, Taylor, I'm going to let you finish, but Beyonce had one of the best records of all time. Dude, I'm sure you've seen it. The look on her face is fucking priceless. In fairness, Kanye West, fuck you for that. But like, she has this whole range going from like, oh my God, Kanye's up here, to oh my God, Kanye's up here. Like, in a whole 10 seconds, man. It's a wild moment, but it really rallies the troops for her in a weird way.
Yeah, it's funny, and that might also be like the start of Kanye West going down his path of psychosis.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the first. I've been a Kanye fan
moment.
For years.
It's
that was
the first moment.
I was going to say, that was the first thing that comes to mind when I think of, when did Kanye start becoming crazy? And he was still putting out fantastic albums at that point in time. I think he did Watch the Throne with Jay-Z in 2009, 2010, which was a great album. But yeah, that's the first thing that comes to mind for him going crazy. And yeah, to your point, that was like one of the most viral things of
ever,
that time.
Ever, dude. Yeah. You still see people making like jokes about this on Twitter all the time. Every year when like the day comes around, it's like, remember in 2010 when?
Yeah, true.
Every year.
Dude, that those things make me feel old now.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, remember, they'll do it for sports too, where they're like, oh, remember when, you know, LeBron and the Warriors were playing in their third back-to-back finals? I'm like, that was only a couple years ago.
Dude, you know what makes me feel old is when if I'm watching like ESPN, I'll see like sometimes they'll play an old clip from a Sports Center from like 2004, and you're like, holy shit, Stuart Scott's on that.
Yeah.
Holy shit. And that was 20 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm feeling it, man. But it really is like two roads diverging in this moment where Kanye still has a lot of success after this album, but Taylor Swift's like rise. Her trajectory has increased. Like the quickness with which she climbs into superstardom goes ballistic in this moment.
Yeah, definitely.
It's horrible in the moment, but great in the long run. Awesome, awesome. And it comes back later too when he's with Kim. We'll talk about it that later, but it comes back and it strikes again gold for her.
Also, this song helped produce Runaway, which is one of my favorite Kanye West songs of all time.
Kanye also, he put out a track, which one, maybe you know it, where he's like, I made that bitch famous.
Oh, yeah, that's from Life of Pablo.
All-time jackass move.
Yeah.
All-timer.
100%.
Yeah, fuck you, Kanye. But anyways, you know, back to the fun bits about this album, man. Just, she's 18, 19 years old when this album comes out, and it perfectly encapsulates that story. The story of a senior in high school going through the things that a senior in high school, like, just the things that happened to them. But, like, etching it out so masterfully and so, like, in some songs, such a biting, like, ferocious way almost. It's a masterclass in songwriting. It's a masterclass in pop music.
I was going to say, the songwriting, and it was good on the last album, but the songwriting's really, really good on this album.
Yeah, there's nothing bad I can say about this album, except maybe I didn't need the bonus tracks. That's about it.
Yeah, totally agree. When I was listening to the bonus tracks, I was like, I see why they didn't make the album.
Yeah. That's both sets of bonus tracks, where you got the bonus tracks on the Platinum edition of this album, and then you have Taylor's version from the vault also.
Yeah. I didn't know if when I was listening to all those tracks, I was like, oh, maybe I'm just like, maybe I'm not in the mood for this, or what, or maybe I, you know, whatever, like, maybe I'm having an oversight here. But to hear you say it too, I was like, oh, these bonus tracks I could do without.
Yeah, they're like, they didn't make the album for a reason.
Yeah.
Also, having a song be titled, you know, song title, parentheses, Taylor's version, parentheses, from the vault is fucking hilarious. If I was her, I would lean into it and put out two more tracks that were, you know, track 27, Taylor's version, from the vault, deeper in the vault.
Yeah, that'd be funny. Yeah, they are absurdly long.
Oh, man, I love it. All right, that feels like a good way to get into this album.
Yeah, so it opens with the title track, Fearless. Right off the bat, you notice from the last album, her voice is infinitely better. This is a great, great open, great song.
It's just full. She's found her, like, her stride. It doesn't, there's no, like, ambiguity or shyness about this. It's bold in your face, like, strong vocals here. And a very catchy pop country sound to it. You know, you got the loud, strummy guitars, the hovering, not dobro, the fucking, what's that? That string instrument. Anyways, it'll come back to me. And what you'll notice throughout this album is, like, the male vocal backup that they had on the last, Nate, on the last album is nowhere to be found on this album. There's a couple tracks where you do get male vocals, but it ain't Nate. You know, particularly, and again, this is much later on. You get a track later on with Keith Urban, which is pretty cool. But yeah, no Nate. She doesn't need that anymore. Her voice is filled out, and it sounds fan-fucking-tastic.
Yeah, a couple fun facts on the album. This was, like you said, this won Album of the Year, 2010 Grammys. For once, the Album of the Year and, like, the public best-selling album matched up, which is the first time that had happened in, like...
What?
It's the first time that it happened in I don't remember what year, but a long, long time.
Yeah, because now that I'm thinking about it, like, I would imagine the highest selling album of the year is generally a pop album. And pop albums
don't usually win the Grammy.
Yeah, they just tend to be a little bit more surface level than as deep and complex as this song is. Or this album, sorry.
Yeah, she also, when this track became the fifth track from the album to reach the country top 10 charts, she became the first solo female artist to collect 5 top 10s on the chart from the first 2 albums. The only other previous acts to achieve that were Brooks and Dunn and the Dixie Chicks.
Yeah, and it strikes me as insane that a 19-year-old female country singer won Grammy's Album of the Year. Just put that in context with, like, some of the other people who are winning Album of the Year, man. Like, even the people who were, like, in the nomination that year, like, Beyonce was an option. True. I think it was Beyonce. And Taylor Swift beat her. That's fucking crazy, dude. But it's a testament to her work. So.
Yeah, I can rattle off the last couple albums of the year if you want.
Yeah, sure, go for it.
Let me just scroll here. Wikipedia's got it all the way back from when they started doing this.
I'm looking at Greta Van Fleet's Anthem of the Peaceful Army. And I've never noticed this before, but the way they have the two suns kind of like splayed out, you can almost see a face in the whole picture if you really like zoom out and get a little high.
I like that. So this year was Taylor Swift. Last year, Harry Styles. John Batiste, which I'd never heard of.
John Batiste, yeah.
Okay. Taylor Swift again. Billie Eilish, Casey Musgraves, Bruno Mars, Adele, Taylor Swift again, Beck, Daft Punk, Mumford & Sons, Adele, Arcade Fire, Taylor Swift again, Robert Plant, and Alison Krauss. We'll have to check that one out. In 2009. And then Herbie Hancock, Dixie Chicks, U2, Ray Charles, Outkast, Norah Jones. That's a pretty good mix-up of what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, and I guess, aside from Taylor, the pop artists that stuck out to me were Billie Eilish and Daft Punk. Am I missing one?
I don't know what you'd classify Adele as. Not pop, but...
It's pop adjacent. More... I don't know. Yeah, it's a good question. Maybe jazz?
I don't know.
Interesting. But yeah, the point is, it just strikes me like, other than Taylor, was there any country? Oh, Dixie Chicks.
Yeah, Dixie Chicks.
Yeah, so I guess they had made the point. But the point is, it's like, those are all fairly accomplished artists.
And also, I just rattled off like the last 17 years, and I read Taylor Swift's name like 5 times.
Yeah. And so we'll get there, man. But what the hell? Nobody else was on that list more than twice.
No.
That's insane. So good for her, man. And again, I guess that's a lot to say. The opening track here is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's really good.
All right, next one, 15. This is slower, sadder, simple, kind of strummy acoustic here. But again, the vocal work is just so powerful. You hear, like, it's just so gripping, man. So, like, heavy and like, longing. Not lustful, but wishing to be back in those moments and, like, just understanding what it's like to be a teenager, man.
It's the ultimate nostalgia song. So, yeah. So relatable, so raw, such good vocal work, such good storytelling. She wrote this song about her best friend. Her name is Abigail, who she met in 9th grade and is still best friends with, you know, today. And she said that she started everything with the line, "Abigail gave everything she had to a boy who changed his mind," and then wrote everything else around that point. And just the way that she writes, "When all you wanted was to be wanted, wish you could go back and tell yourself what you know now. Back then, I swore I was going to marry him someday, but I realized some bigger dreams of mine." And it's just, yeah, it's just such good writing.
And that line she wrote everything around, that Abigail gave her heart to a boy line, it's perfect, man. It's such a cool, like, clever way of writing this whole song. Because, like, it perfectly encapsulates that feeling they had. You know, your friend is just so destroyed over a high school boy. You know, like yes, from our perspective, from everybody's perspective, it's like, this is a silly thing. It's dumb, whatever. But, like, when you put it in the context of they're 15 years old in the middle of high school and, like, just absolutely crushed because this guy changed his mind and either cheated on her or left or whatever, it's absolutely gripping if you're interested at all.
Yeah, it's super relatable. Everyone goes through something similar.
100%.
Yeah. And it goes from Fearless to 15 to Love Story, which is one of her, you know, most popular songs, certainly one of the most popular off the album. Just another fantastic, fantastic song.
Much like Tim McGraw on the last album, it strikes me as a bit bold to take a Shakespeare classic, his most, I guess, at least recognizable work,
sure.
And say, you know, I do, it was fun, great read. You know what, though? I didn't like the end so much. Let me alter this a little bit. It's a crazy choice, but it works out incredibly, man. This is one of my favorite Taylor Swift songs,
yeah,
dude.
Same.
It is just so goddamn catchy and fun and energetic. And, like, you can't help but smile by the end of this song when he gets down on his knee and proposes. And it's just, it's awesome, man. I love this track.
Yeah, and I've got a couple of fun facts on this one. The first, which is we've come across this time and time again, but she was met with indifference on this song from the record company and her parents, and she had to fight for this song to make, which is like, it's
what?
Crazy. Like, how could you hear this song and be like, nah, like, I don't know about this one for the album.
Yeah.
Like,
what are we talking?
Especially if you take into account all the other ones that she had written that were on, like, bonus tracks.
Yeah.
And they're like, nah, I think you should put those ones in instead.
Like, oh, man. And it's an interesting point, because this certainly isn't the biggest song off the album, but I mean, it's the song that you hear, like, you'll still hear this one if you go out, like, any social, like, scene where they got music going, like, for a large crowd, you'll hear this song. And they don't play a lot of other Taylor Swift, but they play this one.
Yeah. And the inspiration was based off a real experience where she had an argument with her parents over a boy. And, you know, they thought he was no good, and Taylor thought she was in love. Let's see, what other fun facts do I have here? Okay, so here's a good one. So, Love Story Taylor's version debuted at the top of the country chart in 2021 when she did the re-record.
Nice.
It was the second song to reach number one on the tally twice in separate iterations by the same artist, with the only other one being Dolly Parton's I Will Always Love You, which she did a re-record for a film. In the 80s.
Oh, I wonder if that's
The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. That's the name of the film.
Oh,
I don't know if someone duped me on that fun fact, but
fun facts with Joey. Oh, that's interesting. Well, who's the is it Amy Winehouse? No. Who's the I Will Always Love You? It's not Dolly. Somebody else. It's not Amy Winehouse. But anyways, that version of I Will Always Love You fucking rocks. I mean, it's a weird song for me to be like, ah, I love it. But that extended high note that I just sang is crazy.
Yeah.
It's not Amy Winehouse.
Whitney Houston. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, she kills it. I didn't know Dolly had a version of that track. Anyways.
But yeah, like you said, it's awesome that she changes the ending of the story to be a happy ending. And
yeah, because the original Romeo and Juliet is wild, where, like, they run away and then they poison each other and die.
Yeah. But yeah, like when she's singing, you know, please don't go, like, you know, I just, even if you're in the car, you're just vibing, you're jamming. It's a great song.
Yeah, so such great energy. And just, like, again, you hear the perfect emotion in her voice throughout the entire thing. It even... You hear the bits where she's upset, she's angry, you know, like her parents are telling her, don't do this. This is dumb. And you hear her being like that teen angst, like, ah, it's a masterpiece, dude.
100%.
All righty. I don't have anything else for that one, Sue.
No. So the next song is Hey Steven, which is funny enough. The original version had like 48 million streams and the re-record had like 81 million streams.
Yeah. It strikes me that. Oh, also, by the way, I should let the listeners know, Joey made a little slip-up. He listened to the Scooter Braun version of this album. Jackass.
Well, I wanted to listen to...
I can't believe you gave that fuck money.
I had to listen to the original first to see how her voice progressed since she was so young, but then I went back and listened to Taylor's version afterwards.
Ugh. Anyways, Hey Steven isn't a crazy song, but it is kind of fun. I mean, I don't know. It's not really for me, but like... I can see where the stuff comes out here. It's a fairly simple, like, choppy acoustic track. You know, she's singing very sweetly, very lovingly throughout. It just doesn't hit for me.
Yeah, it's just not as relatable for me, but it's still good and kind of catchy. She does have a line. Well, and this song is about Steven Lyles, who's a singer of the country group Love and Theft. She's got a line in the song where she sings, "But would they write a song for you?" which is a sick flex.
Yeah,
which is talking about like other girls that are
right,
you know, have an affinity for this guy.
Yeah,
pretty cool flex.
Yeah, that was cool.
Real quick, I just want to pause. I took screenshots of the number of streams for the original version versus the Taylor's version.
Sure,
because it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So the original version, like Fearless is 114 million. Re-record 248, so like over double. 15 actually has less on the newer version. Love Story has 845 million streams on the original version, 656 million on the new version. Like, it's just it's crazy that both of those have like half a billion streams.
Well, and think about it in this context too, right? This album's been out since 2009. And the re-recording's only been out for 3 years. Well, that's
2021.
Three years. Yeah, less than 3 years.
And then some of the other ones, that one's about the same. You Belong With Me, 600 million on the original, 566 million on the re-record, so already almost caught up. And then a couple more of these that are about the same. There's one. So here's an interesting one. The Way I Loved You had 60 million on the original recording, and on the re-record it has 377 million. It's like the 10th track on the album.
6X. God damn.
And same with Forever and Always, 52 on the original, over 100 on the re-record. Like it's
damn.
It's kind of crazy, especially the Way I Loved You, like that it could not be popular the first go around, but be like a super popular song on the second go around, like a decade later.
Yeah, we're going to, whatever the album is where we get to talking about Scooter Braun and that whole debacle, like in depth, is going to be a long, fruitful episode, I think. What an interesting story.
Right.
The way that their fans have turned out for her version of these songs is it's unmatched. It's unseen. Nobody's ever done this. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's cool. All right. So after Hey Steven is track five, heavy track, thick. Like I said before, nobody does a diss track quite like Taylor. White Horse. It's musically nothing crazy, although I do think her vocal work is phenomenal here. She has some really cool like high notes, inflections, great work on the mic.
Yes.
The lyrics here are fucking biting. Like, just the way, and this is, I think this is a diss track for Joe Jonas. I believe Joe Jonas is the target of her ire here.
Yeah, so Joe Jonas is that on several of these songs on here. I don't know if it was this one specifically, but throughout the album, Joe Jonas is the inspiration for some of these.
But yeah, just the like, it starts, and she does this on a lot of these diss tracks, where like she'll start off and it's like, ah, things are great, like we're lovey-dovey, da-da-da-da-da. But why isn't that it that way anymore? Why did you do this? It's a, you know, it's this almost like sit down, like, what were you thinking here? And especially next week when we get into Hey John, it's even more biting and striking. Like,
Dear John.
Oh, dude, yeah. I can't fucking wait. But yeah, this track is just a songwriting masterpiece.
Yeah, she sings it perfectly, too, where she's singing that I'm not a princess. This ain't a fairy tale. I'm not the one you'll sweep off her feet. Lead her up the stairwell. This ain't Hollywood. This is a small town. I was a dreamer before you went and let me down. Now it's too late for you and your white horse to come around. Just taking that play on like the old, the like
Cinderella.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. It's a great way. And she does that throughout several songs throughout her, you know, the first couple albums that we reviewed. And it's just great. It's just great songwriting. It's like everyone knows like the fairy tale story, which makes it that much more relatable.
Right. Yeah. 100%. I think, especially for a younger teenage girl audience, man, it's a perfect like a master stroke.
Yeah, and she had said this one was almost not included on the album too.
Jesus.
She, but for different reasons, she actually wanted to save this one for the third album because she thought,
oh, no, that would have been too much, man. That album's already mean enough.
Well, she said that we already had the sadness represented on this album, so we wanted to like
not. Yeah, I hear that.
But then her agency had some meetings with some of the producers from Grey's Anatomy, which is like her favorite show.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you know, it'd be cool to have one of your songs on here. So she played them this song and they're like, oh yeah, we'll put this in. Perfect. So then she's like, all right, great. Well, I have to include it on the album now.
All right. We're in, baby. Cool. Who's the doctor in Grey's Anatomy?
I've never seen it.
They're all doctors, but
Dr. House? No, I'm just kidding.
No, there's a male doctor. He's like the love interest in the first six or seven seasons. He looks a lot like John Mayer.
I have no idea.
Anyways, all right, cool. next one, You Belong With Me. I would argue this is probably the biggest one on the album. This is the one that won, I think the one that won the VMA that we talked about earlier for the music video. Another classic, man. I mean, we're, aside from Hey Steven, although I don't even think that's a bad song, I'd say we're 6 for 6 at this point.
Oh, definitely.
You know, it's a classic Taylor. Up-tempo, strummy electric guitar with plucky mid-tempo banjo kind of like riffing in. Powerful, determined vocals, man. It's just everything you want from this album. It's everything you want from Taylor Swift. So fun.
Yeah, dude. And the inspiration for the song, it's crazy how she gets, like, just, she just needs a tidbit to get the inspiration for the song.
Yeah.
Kind of like Mark Knopfler with Dire Straits,
yeah.
Only these songs are, like, a lot better.
Right, right.
So, with the exception of, like, Money for Nothing, Sultan's Swing. But,
yeah.
She said, I had overheard a friend of mine talking to his girlfriend and was completely on the defensive, saying, no, baby, I had to get off the phone really quickly. I tried to call you right back. Of course, I love you more than anything. Babe, I'm so sorry. She was just yelling at him on the phone. I felt so bad for him at that moment, so I came up with the first line. You're on the phone with your girlfriend. She's upset, going off about something that you said. And I ran that into the storyline that I'm in love with him and he should be with me instead of her.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy.
Yeah. This is I guess this is another one similar to Love Story you'll hear in bars and clubs and everywhere, man. It's got that staying power with it. And just that, again, so relatable with the idea of, like, the cheerleader and the nerd.
Yeah. She
it's
wears
such
short
a relatable
skirts. I wear t-shirts. She's
yeah.
cheer captain. I'm on the bleachers.
Such a relatable line. It's perfect again.
Yeah, because everyone goes through those feelings of feeling inadequate. And you're like, oh, of course, this person's not going to like me. They're going to like, you know, the captain of the football team.
Yeah. A bit funny in retrospect, considering so this is one of the things I heard on the podcast that I've been listening to that kind of goes over each of these Taylor albums. It's a bit funny in retrospect, and even not even so much in retrospect as it even was in real time, kind of, where it's like, come on, Taylor, you're bullshitting us a little bit here. Now, again, if this is, I like to look at this from a maybe third person perspective, where she's not necessarily singing about herself, although she may be, which would be fucking insane. I see this more as a character than a biography.
True. And it plays more because she wrote this when she was 19, as opposed to her writing this song today, when it's like, well, you are the cream of the crop.
But even at 19, dude, the first album goes crazy. This album.
No, you're right. You're right.
You know, like, you're no longer little old Taylor Swift.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, like, but it's very relatable. And so looking at it from that third person perspective, I think it still plays for sure. It's just, it's a bit strange given the character singing the song.
Yeah, fair.
You know. All right, that's all I got for that one.
Yeah.
Next up, Breathe. This is the first one I wasn't in love with.
Oh, you know what's funny? I actually think this is really underrated. And this is featuring Colby Calliott, or Callet.
Colby Calais?
Calais, sure.
Yeah, I think they had a moment in the sun around this time. Oh, yeah, this is a slower, sadder song. Sad lyrics, really high, clean, tuned-up banjo. Soft, like, subtle drums popping along here. Violin really, like, gives it that heavy, sad feel. Like I said, it's not for me necessarily. Not to say it's a bad song, it's not for me.
I like this one. It's a song about saying goodbye to someone, although this song never really blames anyone, which is, like, sometimes that's the most difficult part when it's not someone's, like,
yeah,
one person's fault.
Right.
I like, she sings, I see your face in mind as I drive away, because none of us thought it was going to end that way. People are people, and sometimes we change our minds, but it's killing me to see you go after all this time. My note on this was that just, like, the chorus is so sweet with her vocals, and if my wife left me, this song would be on my playlist. Like,
Joey, what's going on, man? He's just breathe on 100 volume blasting through the house.
Yeah.
Pat, we got to do something, man. He's been listening to Taylor Swift for 17 days. Oh, man. All right, next one. Tell Me Why. This is more akin to the last album, sonically. It's got a very country sound to it. But, she doesn't, like, mix up her vocals. Her vocals are still true to her sound on this album, true to what her true sound is, you know. It's no character. But, again, very country. Fiddle, quick banjo, licks, you know, kind of buzzy, mid-tune electric guitar. Taylor bringing the heat on the mic, a lot of energy, a lot of range, just a fun listen.
Yeah, it's funny. This is just a song about a boy that she liked and was upset with. But the way she writes, I took a chance, I took a shot, and you might think I'm bulletproof, but I'm not. You took a swing, I took it hard, and down here from the ground, I see who you are. Like, just that, so the way to describe just being upset with a boy, like, the songwriting's so great.
Yeah. Well, one thing I was thinking about, now that you mention it, is, like, I think, and this is something I continue to kind of explore, is, like, another thing that I find very unique and something that draws people to her is she's not afraid to, like, make her personal life very, very, very public.
Sure.
And so these songs are not, there's no hiding anything in these tracks. I mean, they don't necessarily call everybody out by name, but, like, people have figured it out pretty well. You could sit down and a quick Google search would give you a name for pretty much all these songs. And it's just striking, whereas, like, a lot of artists I find would be a bit more likely to kind of hide that in subtext and, you know, maybe leave it up for the audience's interpretation. She does, there's no punches, like, held at all. And she just calls them out by name sometimes, too, which is fucking wild.
Yeah, definitely.
But, yeah, another stroke of genius on the page here.
Yeah. The next track is You're Not Sorry, which it's one of the weaker tracks on the album, but I think it's still pretty good.
Again, it's her vocals here. I think musically it's nothing special. You know, a lot of heavy strings, heavy low strings. You know, choruses, fill it up with electric guitar and little bits of piano. There is cool guitar solo on this song, too. It's not crazy, but it's fun. But again, her vocals, man, it's just so, like, it beats you down. It's like being in a 12-round match with Mayweather, man. Just heavy hitter after heavy hitter, the way she's, like, just so downtrodden and broken after this track, man. It's awesome. But, yeah, I get what you're saying. It's not – there have been classic Taylor Swift songs in this album, and this isn't to that level. I still think it's pretty solid.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
The next track is The Way I Loved You, which – for me, this kind of blends in with the last two, where it's fine. It's just not – I like the first six tracks a lot more on the album.
Yeah, I still like this one. But I get what you're saying. We're getting to the end of the album. This, you know, just is what it is. Still good stuff, kind of a country rock ballad, higher energy on the mic and strings and electric guitars kind of strumming along in the back. Another really nice solo here too. Good, not great.
Yeah, and Taylor said on this one, she got the idea for the song about being in a relationship with a nice guy who's punctual and opens the door for you and all that, brings you flowers, but you feel nothing. The whole time you're with him, you're thinking about the guy who's complicated and messy and frustrating, which I had a note where I was like, it's crazy that there are people like that. Like that
toxic queens.
That have to date someone that's, like, toxic.
It's just something I'll never relate to.
Yeah, right.
All righty here. Next one. Forever and Always, big, powerful anthem here, kind of. You know, perfect for live shows. Up-tempo, high energy, mostly higher range on the mic. Guitars and mandolin kind of like playing off each other so beautifully, so powerfully. Just another good solo on this one on the guitar. Cool, like, opener for a concert, maybe. Like, especially when you got two albums. Like, this feels like a good one to start with, even though it is... I don't know. It's not, like, breaking, like, it's not super sad, but it's a little sad.
Yeah, definitely sad.
Yeah. I still think this would be a cool open. I like this one a lot.
I think you could totally make this song, like, a pop punk song, and it would be really good, too.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, brother. Let's see if Tom Morello and Travis Barker are free next weekend.
Right. And this one was definitely about her breakup with Joe Jonas. And Joe said on this song... he wasn't bothered about her writing about this, about the breakup on this song. He said, it's flattering. It's always nice to hear their side of the story. kind of a funny clap back to be like, yeah, like, oh, it's nice to hear her side
good
of the
for
story.
Her. All-time bag fumbler, man. Taylor Swift and Sophie Turner, I think.
Yeah.
Bag fumbler. Love it.
And I like the line when she sings, "Oh, and it rains in your bedroom. Everything is wrong. It rains when you're here and it rains when you're gone. Because I was there when you said forever and always." Again, just fantastic songwriting. The idea of it raining in your bedroom is that's awesome.
Yeah, and that's something she kind of uses a lot. Rain is a long recurring metaphor that she uses pretty much throughout her entire catalog. So it's one of those like inside football bits.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, it's the bread and butter play action.
Yeah, which in Raining Inside Your Bedroom reminds me of the That's the Spirit album cover, Bring Me the Horizon.
Yes, exactly. God, we got to get that.
I know.
I got to find a way to get that in here. I love it.
Same.
All right. I just had an idea. We'll get to it in a minute. Actually, quick aside, I sent you. We talked a little bit about politics and music a while back. This is a quick aside. I sent you that clip of Tom Morello kind of talking about, Trump and some other stuff. How striking was that to you? I had told you he was a bit of a lefty kind of, like, strong political left, like, takes. But did that, like, discourage you at all when you saw that? Or was that just like, okay, that's what he is, and, like, I still like it. He fucking rocks on guitar.
Oh, he still rocks on guitar. I just, politically, I was like, oh, he just sounds like ill-informed. Like, just, he's, like, hitting the soundboard for, like, one-liners, you know? Like, there's one point in that clip you sent where even Bill Maher is like, what are you saying?
Yeah. And I don't find Bill Maher to be the most electric, like, quick-witted political commentator either. But, yeah, both of them back and forth were a bit, like, it was almost like they were speaking two different languages.
Yeah, I feel like Tom just kept hitting, like, the soundboard for, you know.
He did use, there was a
capitalism
phrase.
Capitalism equals evil.
Yeah, there was a phrase he used, like, 3 or 4 times. He dropped some, like, innocuous author. And kept using that. And Bill Maher was like, what are you talking? Who is this person? Yeah, it's crazy. But anyways, we'll get to that one of these days. Alrighty, back to Taylor. The next one, The Best Day. We're getting close to the end here. I think this is second to last track or the last track on the original? Second to last track.
Yep.
This one's nothing crazy. Simple, choppy acoustic guitar, strumming along with a little bit of tempo. You know, airy, sweet vocals and subtle, like, banjo plucks give it a really, like, sweet, easy, like, light sound to it. You know, not bad. Not something I necessarily come back to, but it is, like, nice background noise at the very least.
Yeah, this is the one I really like. She wrote the song for her mom without telling her, and then got the track synced up to a bunch of home videos when she was a little kid and played it for her on Christmas. Which is that's an awesome way to, like, give your mom a gift.
Yeah, a little shout-out tribute type deal.
And, yeah, no, I think I like this song just because it makes me think of my own mom, who I have a great relationship with. And it's,
right.
You know, this, again, she just uses, like, this vivid imagery of when she was a kid and she's going through hard times and her mom was taking her out and always there for her. And it's just a sweet song.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. All right, last track on the original version of this album, then, is Change. Some of the inspirations she gets throughout are, like, some of the Taylor Swift side stories are crazy, and I guess there's some other stuff, especially on the next album, we'll get to, but this struck me as very Counting Crows, very, like, early 2000 pop rock, kind of hollowed-out guitars, and the story I'm thinking about right now is the Neon Trees guy. I don't know if you've seen any of that. We'll get into it more on the next album, but she has this moment with the lead singer of Neon Trees.
Oh, okay.
The point is, it is a similar kind of sound to this, too.
Are you sure you're not thinking of... Oh, is that also the lead singer of Owl City?
Yes, that's what I'm thinking.
Oh, okay. See, yes. Okay, yeah. Then I do know what you're talking about.
Is Neon Trees a song by Owl City?
No, Neon Trees is a band.
Am I insane? Yeah, I'm insane.
Is that the same... That's the same guy?
Yeah, same... I'm thinking of the same guy. Yeah, Owl City is the correct band. But Neon Trees, is that a band or is that a song by Owl City?
No, that's a band.
What the fuck am I thinking? I mean, I know what
Everybody Talks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody Talks. Everybody. Yeah.
There's no way that's the same lead singer.
No, there's no way. There's no way. I've just somehow I've conflated the two in my head. They're the same thing.
Oh, okay.
But or an interesting note here is this is also a very John Mayer sounding song, which is funny. So I think this is a good place to kind of kick off that conversation because it's a little bit after this album comes out that she starts dating John Mayer. And there's a hilarious interview she does with what was it? Rolling Stone in like early 2010, something like that, where she's like, I just love being around John. I'm inspired like musically when I'm around John, and like it's just a great person to have around when I'm working on my stuff. He's working on his stuff. Like, it's great. Everything's going great. And then 10 months later, have that next album come out with Dear John on it. It's a hilarious confluence. And I don't want to get too much into it today, but that's kind of all to say that the song is very pop rocky. Which is a change up, because the album in whole has been very country. We said it at the start. It's not necessarily the twangy, deep south, not even deep south, but girly poppy country that we got on the first album, but still very rooted in country. This one, not so much. Strummy electric guitars, kind of in a low tune, pounding mid-tempo drums, kind of rocky like vocals even. It's not at all country, but it's cool. It's different. It's fun. It's like kind of showing her chops a little bit that she has this in the bag too.
Yeah, she wrote this for like everyone in her crew, essentially. You know, like it's a song for everyone that supported her. Not one of my favorite, probably my least favorite on the album, to be honest.
Really? Okay.
I don't know. I like so much of the. I think I just like all the other songs a lot more. And sure. This still isn't a bad song. It's just.
Yeah, I'm not going to fight you on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All righty. So then there's like 13 more tracks. Yeah. We can go through them one by one. Or if you had any that you kind of struck you in the bonus. Because like we said at the top, I don't think the bonus editions of this album are quite as strong. Which is not a knock. Because, I mean, this is an album of the year. It's phenomenal. But. What do you want to do? You want to go one by one, or you want to just dive in on a couple?
Yeah, not really. For most of these, they're, for me, like I said, I see why they're cut. They're still decent songs, but they're not ones that I'm going to come back to. I do think we should talk about the, let's see if I can get it up on Spotify.
There's one bonus song that kind of went big.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to talk about.
Today is the Fairy Tale?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Today was a Fairy Tale. Which is crazy. So this is on the Platinum Edition. So it came out in like 2010. Anyways, it was like the bonus edition of the original version of this album. And this song goes big. I mean, it's kind of a country rock love song. Poppy quick drums, couple of guitars playing, got an electric and acoustic, kind of strings mixed in with it. High energy, sweet, lovey-dovey vocals. It was really nice work.
Yeah, this was my favorite of the bonus tracks and the From the Vault tracks. Just good songwriting. Like, again, just the vocal work is amazing. It's like that country pop rock kind of vibe. Another one that could have very well made the album, and I think it would have been great on the album too.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know. It strikes me that there wasn't a ton of, like, super happy love songs. There was a couple. But this is very much like, oh, I'm in love. This rocks.
Yeah.
And again, with the fairy tale kind of metaphor imagery too, a recurring theme of this album. It fits perfectly.
100%. I also want to talk about Mr. Perfectly Fine, because this is the one, it's either about Joe Jonas or John Mayer, most likely.
I think it's about Joe.
Okay, yeah. This has like 350 million streams, and I don't get it. Like, I feel like this is a very average at best song, and I don't understand how it blew up so much.
Yeah, but I think the writing here is what does it. Again, it's like, it's very similar to White Horse. It's got that same feel where it's like, oh, this guy's fine. He moved on. He's great. Everything's good. Fuck you. You know, it's got that thing to it. You're right. The music isn't crazy. Fairly simple. I mean, what we got here? Yeah, it's just, there's nothing going on really with the music. It's just a simple country track. But
what I did find interesting about this one is she said in an interview that this song kind of pointed her towards the direction of like a more poppier future with her songs. And she, even though Fearless is a country album, there are always these pop melodies creeping in, and this is definitely one of those tracks.
Which is funny because this is one of the From the Vaults, right? So that's a long time to have this sitting in a, on the list, but not have been produced, and then to kind of go back and say, well, this is the one that kind of led me in the pop direction.
Yeah,
interesting. But yeah, I think this is a standout one too. And again, the Swifties eat that shit up. So. You know, a couple other standouts here. Not standouts necessarily because I love them, just struck me as standing out. There's a piano version of, where is it? I lost it. Oh, Forever and Always. Yeah, piano version of Forever and Always, it's too simple. Forever and Always is great because it is full, you know. You just don't get that same heat with the piano version.
Yeah.
Not really for me.
I did like, too, that she had You All Over Me with Maren Morris. I thought that was vintage Taylor Swift storytelling. Great songwriting.
Yeah, that was a really cool one. Country ballad. It mixes in harmonica.
Yes.
Yeah, there's bits of harmonica throughout, which is really cool. I would imagine that's Maren playing, maybe a studio. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird because Maren Morris does like more of the like background vocals on this. But Maren Morris has a great voice, too. I like her a lot.
I mean, in a similar note, later on from The Vault, That's When, featuring Keith Urban. I think that's an awesome, like, duet. Simple country song, very vocally driven, though. And it's not so much a back and forth as it is Taylor gets a verse, Keith gets a verse. They sing a little bit together on the chorus, and then Taylor does the rest. But I just think that's a really cool bit. Keith sounds awesome, man. And the more and more I listen to Keith Urban, the more I'm like, this guy kind of rocks.
He's got a great voice.
Yeah.
All-time totally. Voice.
Yeah, all in all, there's 26 total tracks, including all the bonus tracks here. Nothing else really stood out to me, but those first 13 are a masterpiece.
Yeah, I think they did a great job of selecting the songs that they selected for the, you know, the final cut of the album.
Totally agreed. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Just one more thing. To have 6 bonus tracks and then add another 7 12 years
later.
That's
another album.
That's a whole second album. That's a double album.
Yeah.
Fucking awesome, man. But, like, how difficult must it be to have songs sitting around for that long that have never been used and then go back and be like, all right, what are we doing here again? You know, like, that strikes me as difficult, but maybe not. Maybe there's something to it where, like, you've had this time to reflect on it, and so you don't necessarily have to do it the way you did it then. Whereas, like, you know, the songs that she's already released as part of this album,
you have to do it the same way.
You kind of just have to do it the same way. But with songs that have been sitting around for so long, you can do whatever you want, kind of, and people won't know any different.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Interesting. Alrighty, that's all I got for this album this week.
Yeah, same here. Great album.
Great, great, great album. All right, cool. So next week we are doing Speak Now, quite a biting album. She's feels like she's been holding some of this in now for a while.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to say, given that there's a handful of tracks on this album and the first album that kind of call people out, but it feels like she's kind of let the floodgates open a little bit on Speak Now. I'm very interested to get into that. There's some cool stories mixed in there as well. And yeah.
You know what would be funny is, did you watch Seinfeld?
I mean, I'm familiar, but I don't watch it.
So the series closes out with them going to jail, or them getting tried before going to jail,
That's how Seinfeld ends.
And they bring back everyone that the four main characters, Jerry, George, Elaine, Kramer, that they've wronged over the years, and they like all try against them. And there's also like just in like cartoons, like in like the regular show, because I watched this recently. Like there's an episode where they face all the villains that they've like beaten throughout like the course of the series in like one episode, where it's like this massive battle, and they have their allies from the few episodes where they made friends. And I just think of something similar would be funny with Taylor Swift, where it's like
Taylor Swift faces off against the exes.
Yes.
A bit Scott Pilgrim.
Yes, exactly. Where she opens the door and it's like John Mayer there with like an axe, and you know, Joe Jonas with a baseball bat. And it's just all these guys. There's like hundreds of guys from throughout the years. And then, you know, Taylor looks behind her and she's got all the Swifties, and they go in this like epic battle.
Oh, man. Yeah. That's a funny like music video idea. Oh, man. A thought I had earlier for the football fans also trying to get into this. This album strikes me as a bit 0-1 Patriots. Or maybe,
do tell.
Well, okay. So maybe it's 2002, whatever. You get the point. A young Tom Brady. Yeah, it's probably 0-2. I think 0-2 was the second title. A young Tom Brady has stepped in, solidly secured his role as the leader of the budding empire that is the New England Patriots. And after a first success where he wasn't necessarily the focal point of the offense, but had a great supporting cast, in his second attempt at a Super Bowl, he goes right in there and fucking rains down on them. Tom Brady has arrived. The dynasty is
started
here.
Started the dynasty, yeah.
Bill and Tom forever. We're back, baby. And, yeah, so that's my football analogy for Fearless this week.
I like that. That's a good one.
Alrighty. That's all I got. So let's go ahead and wrap up then.
Yeah.
Alrighty, cool. Next week we got Speak Now and Queens of the Stone Age. And then we got, what did we say we're doing? Vance Joy and All American Rejects coming up a little bit later. We're going to mix in an album review. So stay tuned. All right. Follow us on social, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter @FlipTheRecord. Like, review, subscribe on Apple and Spotify. Thanks for listening.
Catch you on the next one.